Penguin Random House Audio presents Perfect Timing by Owen Nichols. Read for you by Sophia Zervadaki and Peter Hanna.
Prologue. Be still, he tells it. Be still, my beating heart. As this poetic refrain rattles around his mind, Tom berates himself for meaning it so literally. There is no romance in the situation. The panic in his blood. The pit in his stomach. The fight or flight response of a long-gone relative who chose not to face his fate. The worst part of it all? That this chain reaction of physical agony, this panic attack, is all because someone smiled at him from across a coffee shop. Or maybe she didn't. After all, the someone in question is waiting for the man she's with to bring their drinks over. Tom saw them walk in together and asked himself, "What if I could be someone like him?" His answers offered nothing positive. When eye contact was made between Tom and the stranger for the second time, Tom left for the freedom of fresh air and solitude. The truth was, Jess was smiling at him. In the short walk from their meeting place to the coffee shop, Jess had made her mind up about her quasi-blind date. She knew he was looking for a submissive type, and Jess was anything but. That he'd already decided and dictated their plans for the entire evening was enough for Jess to start looking elsewhere. Her eyes found Tom. As Tom stood and left, Jess felt a compulsion to go after him. It was an impulse she couldn't dismiss. Outside the cafe, she looked left and right and left again, like a child crossing a road alone for the first time. The figure she'd been inexplicably drawn to was no longer in sight. Baffled by her own response, she returned to her date. Tomorrow, there would be 250 miles between Tom and Jess. That distance, however, would not be there for long. Part 1. Beginnings.
1. A nice dream. Tom. Cemetery Road, Sheffield, 15th of July, 2015. I don't talk out loud to my granddad. It feels unnatural when I see other people do it. Like they've seen it in a movie and thought it worth copying. I do still talk to him, though. Just in my head. I tell him about what happened over the last month. I tell him about my band and the music, and how things are going pretty well. And today, I tell him about the girl in the coffee shop. Because why not? It would be handy, I confess through the power of thought, if I didn't instantly fall in love with anyone who threw a smidgen of attention my way. I mean, all she did was maybe smile at me, and I was fantasizing about us owning a cat, a cot, and a cottage by the sea. I conjure up a response from him. That sounds like a nice dream. The cemetery is deserted. The sun high enough in the sky to cast only tiny shadows on the rows and rows of headstones, taking the form of crooked teeth in the ground. Grandad reminds me. Back to this girl in the cafe. His invented interruption takes me back to drinking coffee an hour before. I couldn't describe what she looked like now. For any would-be criminal, me doing an e-fit of them would be the equivalent of a get-out-of-jail-free card. I do remember her brown hair and her brown eyes. I have a type, after all. But as time and distance grows between us, her face fades. What would Sarah think of all this? Grandad replies with his bark of a laugh. Sarah is my girlfriend. Sort of. She, rather coincidentally, also lives in Sheffield, so when I take the trip from Edinburgh, I can kill two birds with one stone. visit my grandfather's final resting place, and see my fictitious other half. I made Sarah up after the boys in the band started questioning why I wouldn't talk to any girls after our gigs. Instead of confessing that I have crippling anxiety that seems to be worse around the opposite sex, I thought it slightly more manly to just pretend I had a girlfriend who lives far enough away that they'll never have to see her. Sarah is a junior doctor, and so she works a lot. She's also incredibly intolerant of all forms of social media. Handy that. Sarah's been alive for over a year now, and to date, her invention has had no negative consequences. When people ask when they'll meet her, I offer loose plans about soon or maybe at such and such. Then when the day comes, her work is a bit busy. Or she has some family stuff going on. It's a lie that will eventually be caught out. But for now, it works wonders. It's a long way to come to Sheffield from Edinburgh, but it's a journey I'm always glad I've taken. Grandad is the one family member I get on with. And while true, he's been dead for 5 years, in many ways, I still prefer his company. He was the reason I got into music. Patrick Delaney, well, never a household name, had a following of some pretty devout fans. He left behind 3 studio albums and 1 live record, as well as lending his skills to a number of other albums by better-known bands. His death, and the circumstances surrounding it, only added to his mystique. But to me, his only grandchild, he was a hero before I knew he'd toured the world. Before I knew, he'd been praised by everyone from Dylan to Bowie. Thus began my journey to what is undeniably an all-encompassing obsession with music. It's why I'm so resolute that we will make it. I am driven by an absolute certitude that our music will one day take us to places we could only dream of. Who cares if right now I'm rendered unable to speak to anyone I deem remotely attractive? Because in a few years' time, when me and the rest of our band are gracing the covers of every music magazine still in publication, then I'll have confidence. I want that so-called normal life, and ironically, my best hope for getting there is through unbridled success. And with that success, in my own way, I'll keep my granddad's legacy alive. When they ask me what my biggest inspiration is, I'll say, Patrick Delaney. I'm suddenly motivated for the first time ever to say this last bit out loud. Love you, Grandad. See you next month.
2. Little Wiener Men. Jess. Matilda Street, Sheffield, 15th of July, 2015. The messages from Matt start off nice. Lots of checking if I'm okay. Concerned but respectful. About 5 minutes after my weird manic moment of running after a complete stranger, I decided our first date set up really wasn't going anywhere, and so I let him down gently. Actually, I didn't do that. I said I wasn't feeling well and asked if we could rain check, knowing full well that no matter how sunny the next day, there was no way I'd be seeing Matt again. Within the first few minutes, he'd witted on about TV and films I just had to be watching and explained to me the virtues of the beans we were drinking and why they were so special. He was undeniably handsome, but I prefer a face with a little character. I'm not saying I'd love a partner with a gigantic nose or a mug with tattoos, just something unique, so I won't get bored gazing at it if we end up together for the next several decades. Like that guy in the corner of the coffee shop. He had something interesting going on. Heavy set, sure, but he wore it well. His scandy look of scarf and hat, even though it was inside in July, set him apart from anyone else I'd seen since the leaves turned green. I don't know. Maybe I was just looking for a distraction from Matt's disappointing introduction.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?